So friends, let us begin with our usual chant. Vande Vamsidharam Krishna Smayamanam Mukhambhujam Pitambaradharam Neelam Malyachandan Bhushitam Radha Chitta Chakurin Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayana Swayam Vyasena Grathitam Purana Muninam Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshini Bhagavati Astadashadhyayini Amba Swam Anusandadhame Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvesvini. Dear friends, in this weekly study of this great scripture, which is at once very sublime poetically and still extremely practical, we have come to the 18th chapter, and for last few classes we have been discussing the salient features of how our attachment comes in life and how we get wound. We all love freedom, but the problem is that we are not aware how bondage creeps in our life. And therefore, when it comes to the jarring feeling about the bondage and one wants to become free, one thinks of taking the life of a monk, that let me give up this householder's life. So many problems, so many constant working with people, and concerns about my family, about my work, about money, and so forth. There is no freedom possible in this life. So, let me become a monk. As if becoming monk is the way that will free you automatically. But this wrong idea sets in the mind, because from a distance things look different. If you are not a monk, a human tendency is to blame one's situation and surroundings for all the shortcomings or the troubles that we are facing, that it is because of this. One never looks into the internal things that are really causing the problem, but tries to place the blame on the external conditions. That one person I know always has been saying for a lot of many years now that I want to come regularly for meditations. But for this few weeks I am so busy I cannot. After a few weeks the situation is will become all right and then I will start meditating. And I always smile because it is never the fault of situation as such. We put it on situation. But it is the problem inside that is preventing us from doing that. And so Arjuna, who is a great representative of ours, thinks that it is this bondage of our my getting entangled into the family life and all the worldly things like becoming a king or a warrior and getting into the corresponding all those entanglements, that is the problem. And so if I get away from that, then it will be all excellent. There is another thing that is going on in the subtle levels of the mind, that because if I am not a monk and therefore I am getting bound all the time, then there is no way of freedom for me. So let me be resigned to my present situation in life and then try to make just most of it, try to get more pleasures, more money, more satisfaction here. And that's about it, because the liberation is only for monks and becoming a monk is not possible for me, it is too difficult. Or unless I become a monk, it is not going to be possible at all. So therefore, nobody should blame me. You know, we are very inside. Our awareness is always about not people blaming me. Even if something has happened bad, we may feel sorry for that happening bad, but we become suddenly very protective. If the blame for that bad happening starts coming to us, we run away or protect ourselves. No, no, I didn't do it. It was not my fault. It is the situation or my neighbor or my mother-in-law or whatever. That is to be blamed for this. No, I am not part of it. And thus, this idea that, well, you are, why are you not striving for freedom? A human being has conscience. And that conscience keeps on pricking. If a person is just embroiled in seeking sense pleasures, then that conscience starts pricking. Hey, what are you doing with your life? You are now no different from animals. You are living just life at that level. Eating, drinking, having sex, and that's it. It is that's it, the level of animals that you are living. And so, maybe you are getting some education, maybe you are doing something, but that is just for enhancement of your sense pleasures. But what are you using your life for when that conscience starts pricking? Then we have to take some painkillers, you know. Just as when something is happening, a headache, and we don't know the what is causing the headache, then we take some temporary painkillers and then the pain subsides for a time. So we take such painkillers in life to keep this prick of conscience away. And we go and mix with friends, and we further try to build our psychological defenses by saying that after all we are different, that higher pursuits are for a different kind of people. they are all those religious, spiritual, saintly people. I am not a saint after all. And see friends, I have heard this statement from so many people. I am not a saint and let me become one. But the idea in saying it was that don't expect any good behavior or spiritual striving from me. It is for the saints. I am not a saint. And thus, if I am not a saint, therefore, whatever sins I commit, they are all right. By definition, I am not a saint, so I will be not doing anything saintly. I will be confining myself to the activities reserved for the sinners, because I am that. So it is thus it becomes a support, an intellectual support for our behavior. That is how at various level our attachment works. And Sri Krishna is trying to tell Arjuna that no dear, it is whatever may be your situation, it is the cultivating of inner virtues and disciplines that is very important. Not your external situation, as whether you are a monastic or whether you are a householder, that is not the determining factor. The determining factor is whether you are trying to build your spiritual life. And everybody has the equal possibility for that. Any person, every person has equal possibility. And that is what Vedanta assures. No privileges for anyone. And that is why Vedanta is the most democratic religion. And democracy, everybody has one vote, you say. You may be tall or you may be short, you may be very rich, you may be poor, you may be very intelligent, you may be fool, but yet all, just one vote for everyone. So we are all same there. So in Vedanta too, this understanding that every being has equal potential to realize the truth and become free. When the result is shown, everybody wants it. Everybody, each and every individual wants freedom. Right from child to an old man. Every person wants to be happy. And therefore, every person actually should be doing that by which it gets attained, and should avoid doing that by which it does not, or it obstructs the attainment of that. And therefore, Lord Krishna is pointing out this truth. Vivekananda never was tired of telling, each soul is potentially divine. Each of us must assure ourselves. Each of us should say, well, I am as divine as any Buddha or Jesus or Ramakrishna ever was. I am equally divine. They manifested it, I did not manifest it. So let me work to manifest it. As if I manifest, there will be the same result for me too. There is no privilege for anyone. You have the same right. Each of us have the same right. Whether you are a monk or a householder matters not. Only thing is, you have to take the right path. It is not externals that matter, but the internal cultivation of our awareness, that is important. And that is what Lord Krishna is explaining to Arjuna, that it is the giving up of the results of work nobody can ever give up work as such. And he told, therefore, the last class, during the last class we saw that how there are various reasons for which people give up the results of the work or work itself. One is tamasika tyaga, mohattasya parityaga. Whatever should be done, this person doesn't do because of delusion. Thinks that no, if I do this I will get bound. No, it is not the work that binds you. It is something else. It is important to see this idea that the bondage comes not from work, but from the poison of attachment that we put in it. So that needs to be kept aside. The work needs to be done. And we do not do that. There is the story of a person who thought that it is there was a bag in his hand, and there was a stick. With a stick he was carrying that bag. And then as he was going through the forest in India, there a scorpion got in there and stung his hand. And he thought, oh, this stick has stung me. So he left the stick, and then he was carrying the bag. But the scorpion was on the bag, so the scorpion was stinging again. So he wouldn't know actually what is to be given up. He was giving up the wrong thing. It was the scorpion, not the stick, nor the bag that was stinging. So, therefore, our work does not bind us. It is the scorpion of attachment that is loaded on it, and that we invite, friends, really speaking. It doesn't come as such, but we send an express invitation to attachment, and thus it comes to us. It comes then, once it comes, it doesn't leave easily. It is that kind of a guest who comes in and then refuses to leave, remains there. Therefore, in our Hindi language, there is this attachment is called asakti. So, asakti has another a pun on that word. So, one preacher explained it like this. Asakti means it can come anytime. Kabhi bhi asakti hai. It cannot go. Its name is not ja sakti. It is only asakti. It can only come. It doesn't go easily. So that is the nature of it. So if it has come, we have to make special efforts for push it out. So a tamasika, a deluded person thinks that the work is the cause. And so what work actually needs to be done, the fellow gives up the work, but the attachment remains. The work goes, but the attachment for the work remains. That is the problem. Then the one who is Rajasika, he looks at other things. Oh, this work may entail lot of hard work, lot of efforts I have to put in. And then that is troublesome for me. So let me, because of the fear of having to do lot of work, that fellow avoids it. And that, no, it is too much for me. Why should I do that much labor? Let me avoid that. So that fellow avoids the work, not the attachment again, but because, not because being deluded, this person knows that it should be done, but does not do because of the fear of a lot of hard work and pain, because it may entail lot of pain. so therefore avoids that work. But a sattvika person, a really spiritual aspirant, what does that person do? That person does the duties, does all those works which are to be done very sincerely, putting all the mind, a whole soul in that, and yet does not seek any fruits for himself or herself out of it. Does it fully offering the results to God, that God, I have done my best, now you take care of the rest. And that is the great attitude, that it is up to you now, the results are offered to you. So everything is therefore to be offered to God. Do the work, let the results be offered to God. Thus one becomes free gradually from attachments, that I have done whatever was possible to be done, what was due for me to be done, I did that. I did not run away from that. I didn't avoid any part of it. I did what to my best ability, everything. Now, the results depend on God. Results belong to God. Who am I? I do not take the results of it. Now, this entails, this idea is very beautiful. But this entails many things that are connected with our attitude towards various works. How our minds get bound to different works is to be analyzed. This is a great psychology, friends. How I get entangled in a work that I am doing. It is bringing pleasure to me and I get attached to that pleasure. It gives me a sense of superiority over others, that look, this I am Yogatmananda, I can give such lectures, how many can give? So I feel a sense of superiority in doing this kind of work. So one who performs that work, you know, that yes, I am specially, trained for this, or I have cultivated special skills in this, and this is a very skillful work, and so you feel proud about it, and thus you get bound by it. Unawares, you are not aware of it, but you feel that this work is not an ordinary work. Not that any XYZ can do. This is something that requires lot of skill, and therefore I am doing it. Or I avoid or shun or hate those works which are just ordinary works. Well, what do you mean? I am a skilled surgeon. I should be just doing the vacuuming. Hey, anybody can do it. I will not spend time in it. I should not be doing it. I am a very highly skilled surgeon. Great, very good. But what is happening here? The work that you should be doing, that work has come to you. At this moment you are supposed to do the vacuuming. Not that every moment you have to hold your scalpel and start cutting, but it is this is the work that is at the moment you have. And so do it. Don't have that feeling about any work that it is insignificant. It is not very propitious. Nobody gets much praise for it. Nobody gets big awards for it. If I do surgery, then I get a very that requires lot of skill. My fame spreads all over. My picture comes in the newspapers and TV all over the world, I get known. I may get into Nobel Prize and things like that for all these innovative things I am doing. But whoever got any kind of award for vacuuming, I have not heard. Have you? That it is not. You don't get an award because it is not something that requires a lot of skill. It does, but then it is not something very uncommon. But the mind goes to such things. Everybody's mind, just analyze. So Lord tells that look at your mind, how it works. The 10th verse, friends. Na dveshti akushalam karma kushalena anushajyate tyagi satva samavishto medhavi chinna samshayah. The relinquisher endued with satva and a steady understanding, having his doubts resolved, neither hates disagreeable work nor is attached to agreeable work. It is our attraction or liking for something that binds us. Because they are like traps. A mouse gets into the trap. How? Because there is something that the mouse is attracted to. The mouse likes that. The saliva starts coming out. And then the mouse doesn't think that there may be a trap there. The trap is not always invisible. That is sometimes clearly visible. But the mouse is not seeing the trap because of the attraction, the tremendous drag towards that thing, so gets into it. So the attraction to various works that we have, I like to do this. Okay, that liking will you become then your trap. You will get trapped into this. How should we determine what we should be doing? It is a great lesson in life, friends. If we want to lead and develop in our spiritual dimension, then the work should not be chosen on the basis of likes and dislikes, or on the basis of whether that will bring me more fame or less fame, or whether that involves lot of special skills or not. Those should never be the considerations in performing works. If they are the considerations, and let us admit, as human beings, those considerations are in us while choosing that work, that okay, this work can make me more famous. This work has the potential to get more praise, more money and so forth, more recognition. So the mind goes to those works, and they are then the traps. That you get bound by that. The fame, recognition, all comes and goes. And it comes with the riders. That we are not at that time looking at. What are those things? A fierce competition, the hatred, jealousies, all that. Even the ivory tower of the academic research, you see all these things continuously happening. All those heartburns, all that protectiveness, that somebody may steal my research and then I will be gone. And so you look so suspiciously to your friends, at your contact with your friends, therefore are full of that kind of suspicion, that maybe And here being, staying in the university campus and around university campus, knowing many people connected with university, I am pretty well aware of these things. That how a person who is say a very otherwise rustic, person doing some say farm work or mining or some such thing can express the jealousies, the competition in a straightforward way without inhibitions. Would use a few expletives also about that person, will not mind. In this ivory tower of academics, the world become different. Things are said with broad grain and with lot of appreciation, so that I should not be blamed for having jealousy. Not that there is any real concern for other person, but then I should not be blamed for this. I should be called nice. He or she is a nice person. But inside, the pressure builds up. In case of that person who clearly says that I hate that fellow, the things are, they do not become, you know, a simmering fire inside. It finds the wall, goes out quickly. And here, a lot of that suffering builds up. And so many, I get many times this questions from people coming here connected with the various universities. And one person used to do that call many times and come here, that how do you deal with this situation? We say that we should see goodness in everyone, but when I am suspicious, and you don't know Swami, that is their usual, that when they begin telling that after all Swami, you live in a very different protected kind of situation. You are a Swami, I don't have to deal with these things. But see what kind of situation that we are in. We have to be thinking good of others. We have to be street smart. That is, we should know, we should keep a watch on what the others are plotting. And thus you keep on, your mind gets involved in it. You create a nice looking, but very strong cocoon around you, a big bondage, continuously suffering. And the only solution in this is don't do that. Don't look for any recognition. Don't look for any skill. I saw the transformation in that very person. And so I know, I have seen many such, but then this is fairly recent something. And I am so amazed to see this person continuously feeling that sense of fear, jealousy, all those things combined, and therefore can't sleep, can't think of anything really higher or spiritual, let alone seeing divine in others. Even seeing some goodness in others was difficult. Always the fear that my subordinates are plotting against me, my bosses are plotting against me. Idea. I said to that person once that, do you think, and this is not that single, this is an example, many are there, I have come across many. And once I was being told that, well, that person is doing all this plotting against me and it is always like this. Then I said, well, do you think, just logically if you think, do you think that you are so important in the world and that person should do nothing in life but just to concentrate on you instead of concentrating on something higher? You are so important That person will be just thinking about you. Why you think that you are so important to the world that they will be thinking about you to bring about your downfall? Who are you after all? Suppose you are, they bring you down. What good is going to bring them? So why you think that you are so important that that those all those people have taken human birth just to keep on tormenting you? Does it make any sense? So it is. But the change takes place when that person takes up this discipline and being very intelligent, very bright and hard working, the transformation also came pretty quickly. The person is now not looking at any recognition of the work. Any little service that if I can do, great, that is good enough. That is, whatever work comes to me, let me do it. Whether I am getting my dues in that or not, whether people respect me or not, no, don't get into traps. They are all traps. Whether people will respect me. What do you think? People respect today, don't respect tomorrow. That shouldn't become the criterion. So, do things without caring for whether they are propitious or not propitious, whether they are bringing you fame or something, whether you like them or you don't like them. Don't worry about it. Whatever work comes to you as your duty, you have not invited that work, you are not doing it out of attraction to it. You have got that work as part of your duty. Now do it without any expectations. So what a great thing, and it is here that person tells that this sattvika person has removed all doubts about it, that this is to be done. And that work has come to me, that's it, I will do it without thinking that it is I like it or not, whether it involves my skill or not. See, I am an electronic engineer, and therefore I will not do the work that does not involve the skills that I have learnt. So let me, give me some works that involve my skills. Now, thus this person gets unconsciously bound by all those things. Thus a person, he is called here Medhavi. A beautiful word. Medhavi is translated here as steady understanding. That person, Medhavi, is translated here as steady understanding. Some in other contexts it may get translated as a very intelligent person. But in this context, Medhavi, the word Medha, has a special spiritual significance, because this opens up the door for spiritual evolution. Medha is the purification of our instrument of understanding, comprehending, and directing that understanding to make our life different, better. So that purification of our understanding has to take place. It is not that just our education, if I get educated, if I go to college, then my understanding will become better, my Medha will become better. That is a wrong idea. Medha, in Vedic literature you will find this word very often. Medha is even in some hymns, Medha Suktam for example. Medha is considered the goddess, that makes us understand the glory of the self and makes us realize that. It opens up. All of us have that spiritual gene, and the way to that is opened through Medha. In yoga, it is a Medha Nadi is called, a particular channel for the thought currents to pass. Normally, it uses our nervous system, which is a very slow way, a very slow transmission, because it uses the network of nerves, all wires. They are like wires, you know, using wires to send signals. It becomes very cumbersome. It also entails a lot of corruption and loss of information. But when Medha, that channel opens through proper meditative practices, then the thought currents travel in a wireless way. See, we now know how the wireless technologies have changed the way information gets transmitted everywhere. It is similarly in our neuro system. When a person does meditation in the proper way, concentrates on the spiritual values, molds the life in accordance with that, this aperture is open. This is closed in all. Those of you who like to know more about it, you can read Swami Vivekananda's Raj Yoga, where these things are described in details, how this transformation takes place. And thus, when this Medha opens up, what happens? Now, there is not much to do. The knowledge of the self then dawns very quickly. You become very highly efficient in everything. Your mind becomes clear of all clutter. Everything in the world reveals the secret of it, as it were. The knowledge comes to you very quickly, very spontaneously, without corruption. We see that how our sense organs function through this network of nerves, and therefore the process is slow, very limited, and also very binding. Binding in the sense it creates terrible bondage for us. We think, if we think that whatever eyes are showing us is only due to limitations of eyes, that is not really true, then we should be okay taking that information. But because we put on the dark glasses to protect from our eyes from the glare, and if we see all the dark around, we know that it is not that those things have become suddenly dark. I have put shades on my eyes, so that is fine. So therefore, if I know that for dealing in this world I have put these five sense organs to deal with it, but what they are showing is not reality, then we won't get affected by that, but we get the delusion that this is real because I see them. Fellow, your eyes are not perfect anyway. Those who study that how our eyes see, all the anatomy and physiology and the psychology of seeing, then they would and they should know that something I see doesn't mean that it is real. It is seeing through an instrument, and so it is the instrument's shortcomings automatically become applicable there. So this eye instrument has to be good, the nervous system has to be correspondingly right, then the signal should be taken properly to the mind, where a response will come, and then that will tell us something about what we are seeing. And then that is only should be limited to that, like having put the shades. If I put the shades and ask Vishwanath, why your face is so dark today? It is foolish, you say. It is his face is as bright as ever, but I have put shades. So the world is really divine, but I have put these shades of the five senses, and so I see all these silly things around. So therefore, when this medha opens, then all these delusions go away. You see the things as they are. And so cultivation of this medha is very important. Let me quote a little bit from Swami Ranganathanandji's great books, you know, on Bhagavad Gita, Universal Message of Bhagavad Gita. The books I very often use for our classes, not that I always quote verbatim from them, but I study that for the class also. This medha is that intelligence which has touched the Atman. Out of that comes wisdom. One who has that medha is called medhavi. That kind of medha shakti is highly praised in many utterances in the Vedas. You find this prayer hid there. Let me have medha. Taittiri Upanishad also has praised medha. Let me have medha shakti. Not mere intellect, but something luminous, something higher is medha. That kind of refined energy, where the refinement is the highest, is what makes for medha. Our people knew that this psychic energy which flows in us can be purified, refined, and made better and better. Even cultural improvement can come only from this refinement of psychic energy. One may be a crude ruffian. What has happened to that person? His or her psychic energy is of that crude type. So that person behaves in that way. The same person can become more gentle, more courteous, and this development is also a part of medha. The medha becoming, you say, available there, the intellect gets refined, the psychic energy becomes more and more refined. And so this person who is doing the duty and not falling for any work because it entails expression of the skills, or it brings more fame, it brings more money, it brings more, what these days the another word is used, the work satisfaction, that person is not concerned with. Is concerned with only doing whatever has come to you. Do it with as much capability you have, with full sincerity, and do not crave for any selfish gains out of it. Thus, we will steer clear of attachments. If we look at our works in this manner, and we will steer clear of all entanglements and attachments. It may appear initially a very difficult task to do, because we have so many likes and dislikes, and therefore we go to do that, these works. Especially after I came to US, I started hearing it so often. That why you do it? Well, I like to do that, as if that is the reason enough. That why you want to do it? I like that. So don't ask any more questions there. You know, it is because the decision is made on the basis of likes and dislikes, and see how fickle these likes and dislikes are. You like something in the morning, in the afternoon you don't like it. But you have already made a commitment to something on the basis of liking. Now what happens to that commitment? Well, you don't know now what to do. You become confused. That because you liked it at one point, the very nature of these likes and dislikes are like that. That today you may like it, tomorrow you may not like it. It is continuously shifting thing, because actually we like God alone, ourself alone. Nothing else is therefore like permanently. It keeps on shifting because our real liking is God alone. Now the next verse tells Arjuna that look, the meaning of giving up work is really giving up the results thereof. Nahi deha bhrita shakyam tyaktum karmanya sheshatah yastu karma falatyagi satyagi tyabhidhiyate. Action cannot be entirely relinquished by an embodied being. He who relinquishes the fruit of action is called a relinquisher. So you become a relinquisher if you give up the results, the fruits of that work, the selfishness connected with that. If you give up that, then you are a renouncer, a relinquisher. Giving the work is not possible for anybody. If you give up all work, well, I don't do anything, I just sit. Well, you are doing the work of sitting. Can you stop doing that? No, then I will lie down. Okay, you are doing the work of lying down. You are still breathing. Are you not breathing? You are breathing, so you are doing some activity or the other. Can you stop all activities? You cannot stop all actions. So therefore, stopping of action being not possible. When it is said that you should renounce the work, what is meant is renounce and this selfish motives and those results of the work that you crave for, they have to be given up. We shall discuss that verse in more details. Friends, and next Friday and Friday after that, two Fridays we will have different programs on Friday, very nice programs. Next Friday there will be a video lecture of Swami Adishwarananda, a great teacher, a highly recognized teacher. He was the Vedanta Center, Ramakrishna Vivekananda Center in New York for many years, has many books to his credit. And one of his lectures will be shown here on video. And the Friday after that, that is the 19th, Vishwanath will be speaking on Swami Vivekananda and Bhagavad Gita. So that lecture is one of our programs arranged to observe the 150th birth anniversary of Swami Vivekananda. So you are requested to attend these programs too. And then we shall pick up the thread again on then 26th of this month. So any questions about today's discussion? Yes, Charles?
When I was in college, I thought my duty was to bring about a socialist society. So I took courses which I thought were my duty to take, and I think I would have been better off if I took things I enjoyed. In a modern society, you very often don't know what your duty is. In an old society, it came right to you. You did what your father did or your mother did. Now you have to really choose. How can you do that? You don't know, especially in college or when you're younger, when you're choosing a career, you don't know what your duty is.
Yeah, well, that is quite what you say makes sense. And in olden times too, it did make sense. Because not that every time your father's profession or Even now, things that you seek do not necessarily come to you. Whatever comes to you in that position, in that situation, do it. That is the idea there, that you don't have to choose it on the basis of just your liking. That what is available, there is, for example, in this dearth of jobs, there was one professor who lost his job now, because although he was a skilled teacher in some producing some studies, that was not needed anymore probably. So he lost the job, but then he saw that he has to do something to earn his livelihood. So he put a stall of hot dogs in New York. So he didn't think that that will not bring him any fame, credit or anything. But that's a good work. If you do it sincerely, that is also a great work. Many are prepared for that. I mean, whatever then in that situation you get, you do it. Whatever comes to you in many different things, that I have seen many wonderful examples here itself, that whatever work comes to them, they pick it up and do it. They do not really think whether somebody will take a note of it and praise me, or am I, does it match up to my skills or not, does it involve electronics in it or not. They don't think about those silly things, they do it. So it is out of liking. If you go for something, then let us remember that that liking is going to bind us. So therefore, even if you might have gone into it because of liking, still weed it out. Weed out the liking from that. That is what needs to be done. It is therefore a training to our psyche, that whether it was olden times or modern times, those situations are more or less similar. That and duties are not only your job. In your day-to-day life, you have, for example, a duty to your neighbors, a duty to your parents, your children, other family members, a duty to wherever you go. There is some opportunity of performing some work, some duties. Take it up, and that becomes then your duty at that time. So if one does it faithfully, sincerely, without craving for any recognition, then that is wonderful. But if you take it because of liking, there is the lurking demon that is seeking pleasures, that is seeking recognition and so forth. So that needs to be weeded out, that I am doing it because this is what is right now I have to do. If you see somebody on a bus that needs help to get down, well, at that time, that is your work. Don't see that, well, that person, whether he will thank me or not for it. So it is not that only a professional job that I am talking about, or Krishna is talking about. They work in every moment that whatever work comes to us, it is spoken about that too.
But particularly in college, you have a big choice, a lot of choices.
Yes.
How do you make those choices?
Well, that is, you have many, you are right there, it is quite baffling, could be baffling.
Yeah.
But then you make a choice on many different, like your liking, your skills, what you learn better, and so forth. You make a choice, but then after making a choice, now it is your work, because those things shift. And so let you not shift according to that. And so that is the idea there. Yes, Abhijit?
Under what condition? Like assuming, you know, fancy free is the goal.
Yes.
Under what condition taking up the life of a monk is the right thing?
Oh, there, in under what conditions is taking the life of a monk is right thing to do? A very good question, because it is all avoiding, it is don't go to the monk's life, that is what is being told here. But under what circumstances should, Abhijit is very intelligent man, I know. So, very good question. It is under what conditions? First of all, it should never be, what in what conditions you should not take it, let me tell you that. That it should never be prompted by avoidance of duty or avoidance of work. Second thing, and that is more internal, that how much pleasures you value in life more than God realization. If you understand God realization is the goal, and this is, you know, what I was told. Similar question I had asked when I was in college, that I don't know, am I a fit candidate to become a monk? I asked this to a Swami, and that Swami told, well, you decide it, nobody decides it for you, but let me give you a criterion to decide. And a very beautiful idea, friends, that he said, look, if you want only God realization, you have it. You don't even have to become monk or do anything. If you have, you only want God realization, nothing else in life, that automatically settles it. But most of us, almost 99.9% people, do not have such clear idea. They think that, yes, I want God realization, but I also want to be an artist. I also love music. I also like to serve people. I also like to go to various different places on the globe and see, and maybe possibly in the outer space too. I like all these things too. I like movies. I like mixing with people and so forth. And so you have not just one desire to realize God, but a million plus other desires too along with it. Now, he said, try to think about this. In these million desires, where does in the value that you assign to it, to all these desires, where does desire for God realization fit? That how much valuable it is than this desire, and how lower is its value compared to this desire. And then when you see that God realization assumes the highest order, you have other desires, you don't deny that, but you may be able to give them up if because you know that God realization is the highest thing in life. This is, if you think that God realization is highest, no doubt, but not right now. Right now, watching a football game is higher than that, then, that is different then. So then what happens? Whatever is higher in valuation, you reject the lower something for that. If you go to buy, say, a shirt, and then you see the price tag, you like that shirt, but $100. And you say, $100, what is there in that shirt that I should be paying $100? Maybe 25 should be good enough for such a, I don't want to spend $100 for such a thing. So $100 now are valuable, more valuable than that shirt. Do you get this point? Then what happens? You will not give up $100 for the shirt. When you see that the price of the shirt is $25, now the scales are tilted. Now you can happily give up $25 for that shirt, because shirt has more value than the $25. So where does psychologically, not just intellectually, where does the psychological valuation determines where God realization fits in your life? What can you, and that determines, gets determined by that, what can you therefore give up for God realization? What can you give up then for God realization? Anything then that hinders God realization, you will give up. You will not hesitate. So then when that happens, you are ready to take up a monk's life. Otherwise, it will entail lot of difficulties, problems. So therefore, one has to therefore prepare oneself for that. That yes, I have to see that God realization is the highest. It is the goal, not one of the goals. It is the goal. And so everything else can be pushed aside for that if it becomes an obstruction in God realization.
I can see one reason why you should not take monk's life is if you have a job at hand. Because that's the whole point here, saying you have a job at hand. Then that job itself is your path, your truth.
Not necessarily. It is not what is mentioned here. That your job could change. Not that it has to remain that. It could be different. So all these things are, you know, you have to think about it. It is that job is there, and then is it true that you have not given up that job for something else? Yeah. No, that is not. You should not neglect it. Whatever job comes to you, you should not hold it also if it is not needed to be held. Because that is also an attachment. So that is the idea. Neither seek nor avoid. As Vivekananda says in the Inspired Talks. Anyway, it is now 8:42. So, let us conclude with the closing prayer. Gita Sugita Kartavya Imanyat Shastra Vistarayi Ya Swayam Padmanavasya Mukha Padmadvinishrita एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्र गीतं एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मंत्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्री कृष्णार्पणमस्तु. Thank you.